And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 840. Coming at you on a Monday afternoon to talk some early main event ADP. Two drafts have taken place so far, and one was live streamed, which was awesome. We don't see many of those in the main event world, and buzzing names all across that. Talk a little first base preview as well, like we've been doing over the last week with these positions to get you ready for the final weeks of draft season. In order to help me do all of that fun stuff and things, it's my co-host on the show. You can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tid, how are you doing, my friend?
Doing pretty well, Bubba. Yeah, it's main event season, which is kind of hard to believe. I was trying to watch that main event Saturday night in real time. The stream was great by Rob D, and Nelson Souza was on it. Who else?
The robot.
Yes, Phil. How can I forget Phil? And there's one more who I can't remember at the time, but it was a good stream.
Rob Silver in that one?
No, it was Dusty Wagner, actually.
Wagner. How could yes. you forget? That is correct.
Yes, so it was a good time. Yeah, main number three is tonight, so we had to do some finagling to get our main event ADP data because it's not public yet on the site. But the boards are out there, so it's not like anything we're doing is not available to the public. We just have the numbers in the spreadsheet, which is hard to get right now.
Yeah, very hard to get. Thankfully, I know Ben, and Ben knows people, so it worked out very well in that regard.
Ben knows more people than me, probably.
Yeah, but you know, you have the contacts that took care of that pretty quickly, so it worked out well. It's going to be interesting to see where it goes. You found out today where you'll be drafting in your main event. It's this weekend in New Jersey, free parking accompanying it, so like it's pretty sweet. You want to tell everybody where you'll be drafting?
Yeah, free parking at the MTM Mansion. That's a very important factor in my decision to go to New Jersey. But no, I'm picking 12th in my main event. I was telling you and Ryan ahead of time, I was debating whether I should just leave my KDS 1 through 15 or maybe aim for a late pick instead of the middle rounds, and didn't have to worry about changing my KDS because I got the late picks anyway. So it's all right. The end that I'm on has some pretty interesting names. Well, I mean, everyone in the main events are good players, but I'm right next to Mike himself, Mike the Mouse. So that should be a distracting draft, if anything, but we'll see how it goes. And time to get planning. Time to make my roadmap, hopefully, in the next couple days.
Well, that's what's pretty sweet. You get to make your roadmap. At least you got a few days to do it, which is promising because I know yours are full, so it's different. But like, if people are like in OCs or other drafts, sometimes you get your ADP about 10 minutes before the draft. Like it just depends when the draft fills sometimes. So the whole road mapping, you get rough ideas, but that kind of goes out the window. Like I started working, I updated my auction sheet that I use for the listener league, updated it now for my OLAC I have on Wednesday night. That is full. I have the fifth pick in the snake rounds is the way I look at it. Fifth toss in those, but it's go time. You got New Jersey this weekend, Vegas next week. It might be 100 degrees in Vegas. That's going to be something else. And, before you know it, we'll be doing Fab Ben. So get ready. Get ready. All right, let's talk about some of this main event ADP as people are getting, it's the talk of the town these days. And I always enjoy it because a lot of people go, oh my gosh, how'd this pitcher go so fast? Christopher Sanchez, 12th pick, first round. It's like, Ben, you, me, Ryan, pretty much every other show that has not stopped in the offseason has said that this ADP in pitching is going to rise because that's what takes place every time. So like, I love when I watch everyone go, oh my goodness. I guess a surprise, really, we'll talk about him now or later. I don't care. Like Spencer Strider in the fifth round, that was a shocker to many. I guess before we actually go into certain players on this, because we're going to compare 15-team DCs to the first two main event drafts. So we kept it on the 15-team scale. But you said you watched most of it in real time. I was busy. I came back to like the Discord just blowing up. And then you started texting with me and Ryan, kind of filling us in. What were your thoughts, I guess, just like watch anything really stand out to you? Because those are the things I noticed with the Strider, the Sanchez, a few other things. But what stood out to you watching it in action?
Off the top of my head, the first thing that comes to mind is the closers kind of stayed pushed up for the most part. There wasn't a real lax in their ADP. So I just filtered on the sheet that we're looking at for the comparison between the main event and the DCs. And Mason Miller went earlier than his DC ADP. Diaz did. Johan Duran did. Keith Smith basically on par. But Munoz went slightly higher. I mean, it's very minuscule, the averages, but they didn't drop. So Bednar went on average earlier in the two. Devin Williams went higher. Chapman went by five picks higher. So if people were thinking that they're going to get a discount on closers, you better rethink that that prior that you have. And yeah, it seemed kind of chaotic in real time, I think, watching the draft. And I think I said that to you guys. And also just some of the builds I wouldn't have necessarily gone with. I'll just leave it at that. But hey, everyone's got their plans and they have their strategies. And who am I to fault anyone for what they're doing? So, but it was just good to have the mains back. And New Jersey will be just the idea that it is main event season now is what I've been waiting for so long now, and it's finally here. So it's just very exciting.
Yeah, you get to go draft live your first of three main events, which will be pretty sweet. I'm just looking forward to like starting to hear, like, because that same weekend in Jersey, we'll have a few of the auction championship drafts will go on. I'm kind of curious to where that goes, because like I said, I was updating my OLAC sheet, and some closers actually dropped a dollar or two, which surprised me. Palencia went up $4 since I last updated the sheet, but a lot of guys were getting more dollar or two bumps based on job security, based on their injuries. It all made sense, but it's just interesting to see. But I want to know how much, like, does it take a main event jump in the auction championship discussion? That kind of stuff. I'm really curious to see where that goes. But let's talk about some of those big DC guys. I'm just going to go backwards, Ben, from the biggest changers, I guess, that went later than expected in main events. Then we can flip it to the other side real quick. And obviously not knocking everybody, but there was a bit of an injury concern here. Like Hunter Green went 200 picks later at 283. Fair enough. Quinn Priester, 412 almost, which is 117 picks later. Westberg's getting went at pick 450, almost 165 picks later. Jeremy Payne even got a 60 pick bump down to 158, which I think could be sneaky interesting if it's not a bad deal. Blake Snell is Blake Snell. We know that one. But those are the initial injury ones up the top. I don't know if you have anything on that, or I'm just going to keep flowing down the board.
Nope, you can keep going.
Yeah, like the Pena one did stand out. I'm like, I'm kind of cool with that. Like Hader only got a 35 pick bump. But like the disrespect for Otto Lopez going 33 picks after an ADP 244 bin, that just does not fly with me. EC Light, I get it. I'm sarcastic at that point. But I do think Otto Lopez is actually pretty good. I'll get closer.
I'm surprised Clement's even that high in the main event, honestly.
Yeah, I joke a lot because just the game that we played last year on the Fab show. Like, I'm not even close to picking him in a draft. Like, it just hasn't crossed my mind. Like, I think he's good, and at least I got Ryan in the last pocket of ADP to admit that he might actually be better than Brendan Donovan for fantasy. That was good. But I don't pick Brendan Donovan either. He's not even on my board. And yeah, that was a little telling. But like now I'm down to like the, I guess, less than 20, the deltas of minus 20 or less is where we'll look here to kind of get in range of players that most discuss. Like, I think Elliot Ramos is interesting. He dropped to 236. He dropped about 17 picks. Mason Wynn dropped to 271, down from 255. He's a name that, you know, he's going to be healthy this year. That could be one of those late middle infield gifts. I can give you the floor if there's anybody you'd like to discuss. Otherwise, I'll just keep playing with this.
I think both those guys are more safe floor picks, so that's probably why they're moving down, if I had a guess. Which it's fine, though, because you don't want to have all upside, even in a main event. You do want to have some stats at the end of the day. And yeah, Ramos did kind of fade late last year, but I think he still projects pretty well. So, and Mason Wynn, he's a good bounce back candidate, so I think he has that upside. Maybe people are worried about the Cardinals lineup being so bad, but he should play every day and have a good spot in the lineup. So they're guys I would be open to buying the dip on for sure.
There's a handful of shortstops there. We just mentioned Mason Wynn. Dansby Swanson, he went from a DC ADP of 142 to almost 158 in main events. It's a full round drop there. Ezekiel Tovar, he dropped basically around from like 179 to 194. There's been some interesting chatter on him. So shortstops got a bounce backwards a bit, Ben. We got, you know, depends on your if people like, you know, Michael Harris got almost a full round drop. So I think a lot of this also correlates, obviously. Pitchers are getting pushed, but there were some big drops. Were there any names that stood out to you on any of the drops we can anywhere on this board?
No, just going off of Yeah, well, Iglesias dropped a little bit. I wonder how much.
Yeah, that one surprised me too. And he dropped in the auction prices. He was a well, like a $2 drop from, mid-February till now. And I was like, wow, why?
Well, there was a notable podcast that came out that kind of poo-pooed
Sure.
Iglesias, so I'm not too surprised that there's a little market movement.
Sure.
Sal Stewart going the other direction is kind of surprising. I feel like he's someone who'd be going, he'd be moving
Sure.
up, not down. So this is one thing I noticed. So there were some big second round hitters that really fell. The first one appearing here is Trey Turner. He went from pick 28 to 39. So that's almost a round. He went from being at the back of the first to the end of the third. I mean, back of the second, end of the third, which I was surprised to see. I think Ketel Marte had a similar drop. He's not here though, but Zach Neto did. He went from 32 in DCs to 40 on average, 38 and 42 with his two picks. So me, someone who's going to be picking 12th. These guys could end up falling to me, so that's something I may have to consider when I do my mapping.
Yeah, that it would be. Yeah, that Trey Turner falls. Zach, so the early shortstops fell as well, which is interesting.
Abrams fell.
So the shortstop love is getting pushed back, which is quite interesting. A lot of catchers, like catcher twos especially, got pushed back. So it's almost like people wanted to go to Ben. They saw Ben's success last year, punting catcher, and they I'm just kidding, and they want to do
Sure.
that
We'll
direction.
go with
So.
that
Yeah, we'll go with that. I just wanted to throw that out there, but yeah, like there's not a ton of huge change, but Trey Turner basically going a big jump back is definitely interesting. Griffin Jacks with the USADA news still going 10 picks later than in a DC. I figured Jacks was going to get a bump up a bit. Yvonne Herrera with the latest knee news maybe pushed him back a little bit, or people just don't want to stash in the 15 team league. But like those are the biggest ones. Like, yeah, Dennis Santana is another closer. So it was interesting. Like, you started out saying a lot of closers went up, but then we got like Dennis Santana's a seven picks. Like, it's not a ton, but it still matters in the grand scheme. You got Iglesias going like 12 picks later. So there's a couple in that regard falling backwards. But other than that, it's like Emilio Pagan fell back five. Nothing too crazy, I guess. Jansen about five. But yeah, when it comes to the top of the board stayed overall rather similar, like you said, Ben. It's just some minor tweakage here and there, but it was primarily the pitchers, it looked like. Let's flip it over to the biggest risers, Ben. And I won't hit on all of these, of course. I call them risers. Maybe that's the wrong terminology here, but some that stood out to me. Like, let's get to actually realistic people here. J.R. Richey's getting love. Luis Angel Acuña is getting a little bit of love as well. So that's something to keep in mind. If you like Luis Angel Acuña, you got to go around pick 285, 290. So that's a bit of a bunch. Jordan Lawler is up to 242, Ben. Thoughts on that?
That's what some spring training homers will do for you. He will be third base outfield in theory. So he's definitely, if he's in the mid 200s, I guess that's a fine price because if he does go back to being terrible like he has been so far, Lawler, then it's not a complete waste of a pick. But it does have that upside because I remember he was still like 30 bases in the minors, I think 30, 40 bases. So he could be a pretty big stolen base asset. So that makes sense to see him rise up in the main event.
Yeah, I like to see some of those guys, especially like where we didn't really know if they even had a job, and now it seems like they might. So where do they jump to? And it's like it was only like a 70 pick jump for him, but still, like now he's the mid 200s pick in a 15 team league. It's coming at you early in a draft. You can't just sit around and wait on that one. Charlie Condon's getting a little bit of love. It's still later in the draft, but I like to see Garrett Mitchell getting attention. That's always a good thing. But let's talk about some of these other guys. Like Ranger Suarez bends up to 130 from 175. That's quite the boost for Ranger Suarez. You mentioned, like, we'll just stick to starting pitchers for now, then we'll move to somebody else. But like Johan Oviedo's on the board. He was up to pick 362. His spring is getting people attention. Simi Woods Richardson went up 40 picks to 320, even though he's struggling in spring. Ryan Weathers is up to 218. He went up 40 picks. Zach Eflin's up to 346, so on and so forth. Any pitchers' movements, I guess, in this pocket that stood out to you at all?
Well, just that there's so many of them. Like I'm scrolling up and down, and it's just
Yeah.
pee, pee. It's just nonstop pees all over the place, no matter if it's late
It's just a
400s.
puddle of pee.
Yeah, you gotta avoid that. Mick
Yeah.
Abel up 100 picks. That's
That's a lot.
still not a guarantee that he makes the Twins rotation, but someone was saying in the Discord how I think Zebby got blown up again. So that would help. And then also too, when you're drafting the main event first and second like this, you don't have to necessarily stick to okay, who's probably in the rotation. You can still take a couple chances on because we have 2 weeks of spring training left, a week and a half. So there's still a lot that can change. So it makes sense that Abel would go so high. Who else? I don't know why Luis Gil went up. He sucked last year, probably suck again this year. Dustin May is interesting. I
Yeah.
don't know. I don't know if he's been doing well in spring training, but
He's been doing Dustin May things. He like gets away with things but doesn't strike guys out. It's Dustin May
yeah,
101.
not sustainable. Your boy Verlander moved up, but one that I noticed too was Cavalli. He went from he
Yeah.
moved up about 4 rounds, which is annoying because I do like him, but I think everyone else realizes that he had a pretty good underlying numbers last year when he came back from injury.
Yeah,
Who else?
I think this is definitely like, I know it's only two drafts, a lot can change, but there's like all the narrative streets you'd want to go down. But we know, like I opened up the show talking about, we know pitching's gonna get pushed up, and this is a great indication through two drafts. And it's not always like the elite guys, like you mentioned, like Cavalli, 4 rounds. That's a big deal. Like if you know you want Cade Cavalli, like you're gonna have to push the button. Like Shane Boz is going 2 rounds earlier. He's gonna pick 163 instead of 190. Like Boz is a guy I love. Like I would like to leave as many drafts as possible with him, maybe foolishly, but now it's like, okay, you got to take those chances if you want. Main event drafters like Robert Stevenson moved up, and so did Kirby Yates. Kirby Yates moved up 28 picks to 271. So, and then the other thing that stood out to me, well, many things, obviously, but on this little pocket we're discussing with pitching, we talked about how Iglesias fell. His backup actually rose, Robert Suarez rose 21 picks, basically. So it's almost like the main event people are like, yeah, I think I'd rather have some Robert Suarez. Could be to your what you mentioned just earlier about a name on a podcast that did some things, but there is at least some movement in that regard with him. Yeah, but like Eovaldi's up 20 picks. Tanner Bibee's even getting love, so it shows he's all pitchers. Shota went up 20 picks. He also rose like $3 in AAV recently, so Shota is on the move. To the detriment of Ryan Bloomfield's appeal, that is actually happening. There's Palencia. Palencia's up 18 picks. I mentioned he, I put it in the Discord. He rose like $4 or $5 since mid-February. That was like one of the bigger risers, pitching wise, that stood out to me. But yeah, pitching is just definitely on the move, Ben.
Yeah, I was gonna say, should have moved up in my rankings too after the velocity went back up.
Yep, that is a big piece of that puzzle. Where's the name I was just staring? Let me get that good old control F. There it is. Yeah, Stevenson moved up 44 picks essentially. But let's switch it to hitters, Ben. Matty McClain has jumped 43 picks. You mentioned Cavalli jumped 4 rounds. McClain's jumping basically 3 rounds, if you're interested in that. And honestly, like another home run, he probably jumps another round these days.
Or if he like he steals 2 bases too, then people would be like, oh yeah, he's doing it all. But yeah, I had to move him. Yeah, because we talked about McClain, I think, on the last show, right? We did second base, and we were debating. I think because the ADP already had him next to Bryson Stott, and I ended up moving McClain up, but not enough. I kind of moved him back to where his DC ADP had been. So there's still another leap that I would have to take, and I don't know if I want to take that leap because, okay, you can say whatever you want about the projections, but Stott and McClain still project pretty similarly last time we looked. So I don't know. I think people are just trying to. Well, at this point, McClain's going to go back to where his ADP was last year. And how did that turn out? Or whatever it was the year before, whenever he was going around pick 100 or in the 80s, whatever it was. So yeah, you want to take it, but he's like one of the guys where I'll probably just get priced out for whatever it is. I did get him in the DC auction, which was nice. So I do have him on one team. But that's a range where you really want your picks to hit, especially in the main event. And I don't know if the upside is that high for McClain to justify that much of a rise.
Yeah, like I love the idea of McClain. I don't know if I want to take him over the players you mentioned. Could regret it if he hits that ceiling. That's why people are taking him. But yeah, I'm usually not one that follows a lot of spring stuff. I'll take a few guys here and there, but Matty McClain breakout, which I believe the skills, and I've said give the guy a chance from a year off, but I also said give a guy a chance around 190 after 200 at times. We're starting to get into some different territory. A couple other players that I was just looking at here while you were talking, maybe not the flashiest of names, like Kevin McConnell. He's up to 240 now. So he's up almost 40 picks with his good spring. Still doesn't guarantee the job, but he's moving up the board. It did look interesting. Jake Berger's up 42 picks. So people are starting to buy into the Pilates. Remember
that's
that?
Annoying seeing that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one. Like, I actually, like, I just took him in. Good old TGFBI. Just took him recently as my corner infielder. That ADP of 213 becomes a whole other conversation with Jake Berger. Still like him in auctions. He's like $4. That's appealing, much more than the 213 ADP, Ben. But Jack Cags is getting love. He's up to 151 now, if you like Cags. So I guess I'll ask you this before I just start keep naming players off, which I could do all day, because this is interesting to me to see these. Like, Luke Kuechel's up 24 picks. And Sedan Rafael is 24 and a half. They go right – we talked about them last week, Ben, right next to each other in drafts. They both are up basically a round and a half to two rounds right now. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at Connor Griffin's up 26 picks to 122, good Lord, he's going to get close to 100 for no reason. So when you look at these changes in ADP, you're heading into your weekend – you obviously don't have to give all your tips and tricks away because you'd like to win your leagues. But when you're looking at these, like, what are you focused on the most, I guess? Is it more like players I know I'm out on now or players I have to reach on?
What I'll do is just I'll just marry up the ADP to my rankings and then see who is still in range of how I kind of prefer them. Because like I did mention with McLean, I already moved him up, but just not enough to kind of stay with the ADP so far. So what I'll do is I don't have to stay married to my rankings either, because I'll still be looking at the ADP range for when I pick 12th, and then it'll be what, 9th or 19th and so on. So I'll still be looking in those ranges, I'll filtering by ADP so that the players that are probably going to be there for me will appear on my sheet. But ultimately, it's just going to match. I'm going to be matching, okay, my rankings with the new ADP and to see who's probably going to be there based on who I like and go from there. And I may make adjustments if I see big changes, but also too, like once I import the ADP, when it's time for me to go through and do that process, I do have some highlighting, and then it'll stand out. Things will stand out based on how, based on the delta that we're looking at right now, essentially, except for between the two ADPs, it'll be the main event ADP versus my rankings. And I'll hopefully be able to see the big differences that are there now potentially, and then maybe I can make adjustments before I even go into mapping out my draft.
You're just so disciplined, Ben. So just you stick to the what the projections give you, and you roll with it. I respect that. Spencer Strider, for those curious, we joked about the fifth round pick. Between the two, he averaged 84 on the ADP world. So he's up about a round right now, but
still too high. No
still just full endorse that. It is just weird. I know I'm going to revert this to catcher real quick, but we talked about all those fallers, or we kind of highlighted a few of them, but there's still a bunch of risers, like the Ohapi, Carter Jensen, Yainer Diaz. They're all rising about a round or two, so it's kind of like pick your battle, pick your poison on which one. So if you are someone that doesn't want to go too aggressive on catching, might be worth looking at these ADPs, because you can kind of decide who you could be leaving the draft with if you late. But yeah, there's Christopher Sanchez. He's up his ADP 17 right now. That's up 8.5 picks from early on. Marcelo Zuna. Okay, I'm gonna get your thoughts on this one, because I've taken him in a couple drafts now that he signed, because he's so cheap, Ben. I know Marcelo Zuna stunk last year, but prior to that was great. His main event ADP right now is 295. His DC was 303. At that point in the draft, like, for the power potential, I feel like I'm on board. Am I drinking crazy pills, or where are you at on Marcelo Zuna?
No, I agree with you, because there was a DC right where he fell even farther than this at the time. And I said, well, I don't have a utility-only player already, so might as well just take a shot, and I could use power. And all you need is just him to regress slightly upwards, and then you have a pretty profitable pick based on where you're taking Ozuna. And I'm glad you mentioned him, because one of the other risers that I noticed was Jake Mangum. And I don't know why he went up higher, because there isn't really a spot for him right now. I don't know if people are just seeing the ADP that's anchored in the draft room, and they're like, oh, I'll take Mangum. He steals and has a good average. But based on the Ozuna signing, unless you don't think he's going to play, or you don't think Spencer Horwitz is going to play, or Ryan O'Hearn's going to play, Earl Neil Cruz is going to play. All these guys are taking up the outfield and the DH and first base. So there's no spot for Mangum versus righties right now. So I don't really understand why he went up.
I agree. And I love Jake Mangum's style. I think he should be leading off for the Pirates. But you nailed it. Like, there's a lot of mouths to feed. And how does that shuffle? Maybe it does eventually. I know he's having a really good spring, but he's also playing a lot because guys like O'Neal Cruz and Horwitz and others are at the WBC at this point in time. So that allows these things to happen. I would love to see Jake Mangum play every single day. I think even if they didn't sign all those players, they had him like as a platoon at the time anyways, even though he's a switch hitter, weirdly enough, I know. Yeah. But I think the skills are very good. I'd love to see it. I just don't know if we will, to your point. Anything else you'd like to hit on these? Because I think it's very, very interesting to see more of the big outliers, obviously, but not the ones that are in like the 400s either. Those are kind of Captain Obvious things. But like the small ones don't do a lot for me. Like William Contreras is up 4 picks. Freddie Peralta's up 4 picks. Lazardo's up. Those are, yeah, I'm picking 7th and I have to wait 15 picks. I'm getting my guy right now is what those feel like more than I'm jumping someone 4 rounds to go get someone. So what any other takeaways from this? Because I think there's another draft tonight you mentioned, and we'll start seeing some active main event data on the website, hopefully.
Yeah, and the other thing I'll just mention, general take, is that it is only 2 drafts, and it's two people making these ADP swings. So I think if we came back next week doing the same thing, some of these guys may not be as big of risers or fallers anymore. Or maybe we have guys who are not that close or who aren't that extreme. Maybe they do get a little more farther away from their DC ADP. So it's just only 2 drafts, but I think like the bigger swings though that we mentioned earlier on, those are definitely more notable for sure.
Yeah, we'll have to reconvene early next week to talk about how your draft went and talk about if we can look back at a bigger pool of ADP, I guess, and see where the real movers and shakers are and see how that plays out. So that'll be something we'll hit on early next week when we talk about whatever positions are left potentially, or we just talk drafts as we're getting closer. I'll be going to Vegas later that week, like 3 days later. So we'll be rocking and rolling. But let's move to the first base position for now. We've done second base. We've done shortstop. Brandon Waddell helped me with shortstop. Ben did second base last week. I will be doing third base later this week, to be determined on that guest, but we're working on that. Initial thoughts, Ben, first base, when you're looking at the position, I guess what stands out to you at the position? Because, you know, I always use the joke when we were younger and started playing the game, it was a loaded powerhouse position. Now it's a little different. And people will notice when I do these ADP debates later on, they're like, there's a couple guys within maybe 5 picks or so. There's a few that are like 15, 20 picks apart. It's just more profile debates at that point. So it's a really spread out position is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I like a lot of the guys, or most of the guys that go in the top 100. And then I don't mind several of the ones that go between 100 and 200. And then also I have my targets that are post 200 as well. Actually, not as many post 200 targets as I used to have, I don't think. Looking at the names, like there's some guys that I wouldn't mind in DCs, but now that I'm going to be playing for my main event, main events, I don't know if I'd really want to necessarily wait on first base. But the one thing that's good about first base is that you're probably going to get power hope more often than not. So if you don't get an early guy, you're probably going to get maybe someone who projects for 20 homers, 60 to 70 runs in RBIs in the 200s, which isn't horrible. Maybe you hit on someone who kind of has a career year by chance. Or if you do wait, you just double tap and take a couple of first basemen. Whatever you fill your roster with last, usually I like to double tap that, whether that means it's taking them as a CI as well or first bench. So like with any position, I don't really want to have a strict strategy except for catcher and reliever. Those are always the two exceptions, and probably starter as well. But for the other hitting cat positions, I'm more flexible with what happens in the draft for sure.
Just out of curiosity for the listeners here, what changes your first base velocity now that it's not a DC and it's a Fab League?
So looking through the OC ADP that we're going to use for the show. So like, for example, the guys in the 200s, like Miguel Vargas, he's one that I'm looking at right now. He should play all year for the White Sox, has first and third base eligibility. I just don't know how much upside he has though, where the ceiling's kind of capped, because he would provide a good floor. But after that, though, I guess Josh Bell fell. He's more of a 15-team play anyway, but he's fallen a lot in the OCs. But then there's like Luis Arraez, who I don't want. O'Hearn's could platoon, so I'm not going to really – like, he has solid numbers when he does play O'Hearn, but he's older, he platoons. How much upside is there with him? I guess Manzardo is maybe the last real upside guy, because I don't think – I almost feel like Andrew Vaughn's the Lucy gif with Charlie Brown, which I actually just sent in the Discord for somebody else. But because Andrew Vaughn always projects well, but then something happens where he just starts out slow like he did last year. And then even when he went to Milwaukee, he started out on fire, but then he ended up sitting like half the time versus righties anyway. So who knows if that carries over this year or not. But in DCs, those guys are all fine because they're generally going to play. But now with the main event mindset, or just OC in general, OC you probably want even more upside because of how the 12-teamers work. Those guys don't really have the ceilings of maybe other guys at other positions in this range, I don't think.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense to me. That's why I wanted you to explain it to the listeners there, because the depth piece you mentioned. And, like, you know, when I'm attacking it, I have pieces all throughout the player pool in my drafts. Obviously, I've done many drafts, but I've had my drafts where I target the big dogs early for the power or the batting average upside. There's also, you know, I don't mind a lot of the pockets in the middle there. It's the later guys that I have more trouble with, except Jake Berger. I love him, and I don't mind Christian Walker, but the rest of them feel like more like corner infield or bench pieces, which in a DC is great. And a 12-team league, probably not so important, like, because they're using OC ADP, and 15s, they'll be utilized 100%. And I think you said it there, is whatever my quarter infield is, if it's first base or third base on my bench, I want one of the opposite, essentially. So, like, a lot of these guys, like a Josh Bell, I will find on my bench somewhere, or so on and so forth. They fit the mold. Or I like taking a Miguel Vargas at quarter infield, because that opens up a lot of things, because he's first base and third base. So it doesn't pigeonhole you in some of those respects as well. Let's talk about when you're drafting the position. We talked, you know, at middle infield, you're looking at different, you know, speed skills a lot, especially at shortstop. And, you know, some power's there, average, whatever. At first base, not a lot of speed. That's pretty well established for majority of the position. But you have some really good power guys, like I said. You have some average guys. Are you targeting a specific skill set or statistical profile in this range, or is it more – kind of as the world flows in your draft?
Consciously, I haven't, but looking at my player shares amongst my eight teams so far, seven are DCs, one's the Listener League auction. That's a fab league. I have five that have Vinny P or Yandy Diaz. So I guess what I'm targeting is a good average for my first baseman, because there's a lot of guys who could hurt your average at some point. The ones that come to mind are Christian Walker, Torkelson, I guess Manzardo. He could hurt your average. Most of the early guys don't. I guess Devers, there's questions, but he's not going to hit 220, I don't think, or anything like that. But Olsen's always all over the place. Alonso, we've talked about, at least I've talked about him, whether it's on the article I wrote or other people say, like, he's shown that he can hit like 220 in a year, which I don't think is really going to happen anymore, but it's possible. And even Josh Naylor, his average has been all over the place the last few years. So don't expect steals. If you can get them, it's nice. But I feel like I'm trying not to have it seems like I'm just going for guys that have good averages more often than not. And even the top guys, and that's kind of why I'm out on Courage too, is because of the strikeout rate. I don't think he could very well hit 240, and you're not getting steals from Courage, and that's going to be tough no matter how many homers he hits that early.
Yep, I give you yes, I fully agree there. The batting average is the trickiest part for me, because you have a couple guys, like you said, with your Freeman and your Vladdy, like, you could get a pretty consistent setup there. But then there's the Olsen, who's shown his times to get 40 plus home runs and still hit for average, and that's huge. The Alonzo's, like, do you take that upside play? Is where it goes. I'm not counting on steals from anybody in this range. Whatever comes my way is gravy on that one. So we're kind of in the same world there, but let's kick it off with the ADPs for those keeping track at home. We're using OC ADPs from 3/1 to 3/8, March 1st to March 8th, 7-day span. And I want to start here because you mentioned Nick Kurtz and Pete Alonso throughout that discussion. So going ADP-wise, Nick Kurtz right now is the first baseman off the board. Yes, let that sink in for a second. His ADP is like 18.5. Vladdy's is 19.5. Alonso's is 24. So I left Vladdy out of this because he's kind of like his own profile to me compared to these two. And we kind of know who Vlad is. And these guys have more power. He has a much better batting average skill set and could hit for power. But I wanted to get your thoughts on Kurtz here. Kurtz, again, going to 18.5. Alonso, 24. Obviously, the pick difference could matter. But I'm just thinking skill sets in general. We saw Nick Kurtz, 36 home runs, hit 290 in 117 games. I think we know, or at least we think, regression has to come from that when you have a 31% strikeout rate. Then you got Big Meat Pete, 38 home runs, 126 RBIs, 272 average. So the average is back up. He's hit for like a 260 or above half of his career, but the batting, the RBIs, runs scored, and power is insane with Pete Alonso. So where are you at? Are you on Nick Kurtz coming off the Rookie of the Year, just amazing season? I know where you're at, but or Pete Alonso? I guess maybe it's different because you aren't really on either one of these guys. But if between the two, where would you go?
Well, for what it's worth, I have them back to back in my overall rankings. I have Alonso middle of the second round, 15s, and Kurtz one spot behind him. And actually, I have them pretty close to Vlad as well. So it's like I treat them all value wise kind of the same. It's just like, but like you said, you get more average of Vlad, so that's why he kind of stands out from the two. But when why I went Alonso over Kurtz is mainly just the contact numbers. The barrel rates are both 18%, over 18% for them last year. The hard hits are both over 50%. The X slugs are both really good. Alonso actually had a better X slug by 35 points than Kurtz. But everyone knows about the strike rate with Kurtz. It's going to be higher than Alonso's. His contact rate, his overall contact rate is 10 percentage points worse than Alonso's. And because of those factors, his XBA Kurtz's was 30 points lower than Alonso's last year. And also we have the track record of Alonso doing it. But I am someone who's taken Junior Caminero early on a couple teams, but he doesn't have the contact issues that Kurtz has. So that's why I'm a little more okay with making that pick than I am with Kurtz. So it's pretty simple for me. I do have Kurtz high up in my rankings, but I just every time I'd probably take Alonso over him.
Yeah, I'm a big Pete Alonso fan, as many should know. I have him ahead of Kurtz. It's 2 and 3. It's straight down. I have Vlad number one still, but I don't mind you. I have one share of Kurtz in an NPC 50 to say I took a share to see where the build would go. But I prefer Alonso over him more so it's because I've seen it enough times from it. If I'm taking an early pick, like I feel like 240 is at, like he's gone below 240 once, but I feel like 240 is the worst we're going to see with Nick Kurtz, or I mean with Pete Alonso. I feel like we're going to get back to the 260, 270 world because his contact's just that good. And it's a lot of BABIP driven, but you need a lot of fly balls. That'll happen in your BABIP world. But he also, his play discipline keeps getting better and better each year. It's not like superb, but it's gotten better. So like, I still go with Pete Alonso, but heck, Nick Kurtz in that ballpark for a full season could be a lot of fun. There's no denying that. Like just because that ball flies very, very far and you don't have to hit it hard. And Nick Kurtz hits it hard. So there's a lot working in his favor in that one. I want to see. I know they should have made adjustments to him in 117 games, but I want to see if maybe they looked at the offseason. How can we make adjustments facing Nick Kurtz at this point in time and see where that goes? But I'll take Pete Alonso as well. I'm fully ready for everybody, all the Nick Kurtz believers, to throw it in my face at some point in time. But we'll see where that goes. All right, kind of a boring veteran one here, but they're going right next to each other, and I never really know what to do with these guys, so I don't honestly know if I have any shares of these guys right now, and that is Bryce Harper and Matt Olson. Bryce Harper is going with an ADP of 45. That's one of the lower ADPs he's had in a while. It's actually slowly creeping up, it feels like. And then Matt Olson at 47, so they're going right next to each other in the draft here. Like, Harper per game stats are pretty good. I say per game because he hasn't played more than 145 games since 2019. It's always an injury or two throughout the season for Harper. He's one of the guys that can get you a few steals, though, on first base if you want to go that route. And they got Matt Olson, Ben, who, unlike Harper, has played 162 games in four straight years, 156 or more in five straight. Basically gets you 30 home runs or more every year. The average fluctuates a lot, which obviously means the counting stats fluctuate, but he is almost a stat line you can draw in, at least a floor with Olson, which is nice to have. So where are you at on the Harper versus Olson thing?
They are back to back in the next and at 4 and 5 for me in my rankings for among first basemen. I have them pretty close as well overall. So I remember when I first started doing everything, I had a hard time with Olsen, Harper, and Devers because I feel like Devers kind of deserves to be with these guys. If you look at the underlying numbers, even the XBA and the K rate isn't that far off from someone like Olsen, for example. So I think Devers should be in this range as well.
Let's throw him in. It's ADP 63. Throw him in. Go for it.
Yeah. So I still have a currently ranked Olsen, Harper, and then Devers, but the only one I've drafted so far from the group is Devers because he did fall to me, where at that point I'm like, hey, I wasn't really targeting a first baseman at where his ADP was, but I was like, at this point, I'll definitely take a shot at it. And with Olsen, I think he's just more. It's kind of more the track record where he like never misses games, which is not really a good reason to have someone ranked above somebody else necessarily. But Harper's been the complete opposite, where he never gets to 90 runs or RBIs anymore. And I think even 80's been tough for him as well. Yet the projections still really like Harper. He's projected significantly higher based on how I did my Z scores than even Kurtz. Harper projects 1 stop behind Alonso, which is significantly higher from Kurtz and Olsen. You're talking about early round hitters. But I guess people is going off of the projections, going off of the online numbers with Harper, and I can't trust him to give me, at least Olsen can give me 100 runs and 100 RBIs, whereas Harper, I feel like that's out of the question now at this point, because he's either always hurt or just him walking so much kind of hurts that. And since you mentioned Devers, or I mentioned Devers, you had to touch on him. So the only thing is, actually, Devers' contact rate is 0.2% worse than Harper's overall. And his XBA was 5 points lower than Matt Olson's. His K rate was only 2% higher than Olson's. Harper had the best K rate of the three. But Devers had the best barrel rate last year. He had the best hard hit last year. They all had X slugs right around 490. X wOBAs were in the 360 range. Devers had the second highest X wOBA of the three. He has the best pull error rate. So I'd rather just, if there's gonna be this big of a gap in the ADP, I'd just wait for Devers if the draft pick allows it. Or like if you're doing an auction, just pay the cheaper price for Devers, I think, than paying up for Olsen and Harper.
Yeah, I don't dislike that at all. I've been paying. I pay. I actually have a few Denver shares. So I was trying to say there, I don't have any Harper or Olson. But it was interesting hearing you talk about that. Where Harper rates out based on projections, and I think it's a lot of like I opened up with is Harper like per game per like is actually a really good player. It's just it's the per game part that is the problem with Bryce Harper, and this is another reason why I really like doing auctions now, is because you can see where these guys kind of land. So Olsen has an AAV of $22. Harper has an AAV of 21. But to your point here, Devers is down to 19. So it's $2 cheaper, which maybe is the difference in the ADP that we're discussing here. But if you're looking at profiles, you're looking at quote unquote a discount, as we were talking about there, taking your chance on Devers, because I think you mentioned that the contact skills are very similar to what we've seen. He just severely underachieved last year. You and I both don't think he's hitting 220. Let's be realistic about this. And he still proved he has power in San Francisco. So I have no problem worrying about that whatsoever. But yeah, I think I know I have Olsen ranked fourth in my rankings. I have Harper at 8, and I have Devers at 5. So and the Harper thing is because of the injuries. Like, I think the skills are awesome. I've always been a big Bryce Harper fan, and if he ever stays healthy, he'll blow my thoughts out of the water. But yeah, I don't know when he's going to stay healthy is the problem. All right, next debate we have up here as we move down the ADP ladder, Josh Naylor at ADP 64, Freddie Freeman at ADP 65. So they're going right next to each other. Naylor is getting quite a jump from previous seasons, Ben, because, well, he got a good jump from first base often, as he stole 30 bags last year to go 20 home runs, and he hit 295. So he did everything right. Like, it was the perfect storm for Josh Naylor. Then he got Freddie Freeman, who slips and showers and hurts wrists and all kinds of stuff, but still at 24 home runs, hit 295. Freddie hits for average. Freddie hits for, 25-ish home runs. Freddie does Freddie things. Where Josh Naylor, every season's a different profile, it feels like, with him. Like, there's something that stands out. Last year, he did a little bit of everything, to be fair. But where are you at on these two in a draft? Are you taking the potential upside? Can Naylor in Seattle do it again since most of the steals came in Seattle? Or do you want just that consistently boring old guy that's on Bloomfield's teams named Freddie Freeman?
Yeah, it's actually not really close based on my rankings. I have Freddie ahead of I'm playing with Ryan here. I do have Freddie well ahead of Naylor in my overall ranking. It's almost two rounds ahead, but I haven't taken either one, which I kind of alluded to earlier when I mentioned my player shares for first base. I just haven't really wanted to draft Freddie because I'm just afraid that he's going to collapse one of these years, and I don't want to risk that on a first baseman that old at this early in the draft, because there are options that I would take later that I'm fine with at a discount or with, of course, worse projections than Freeman, but I'd rather take the players around Freeman who are at different positions is what I'm trying to say. I could do fine without having Freeman on one of my teams. And then with Naylor, I actually have him behind one of the next guys we're going to talk about in my rankings. And and you mentioned it with Naylor, just how like the profile fluctuates so much, and there's no way I don't even want to try to predict his steals. And like I said, when we did the overview before we got into the debates, is how I don't expect steals from first base, especially, let alone corner. So I'm not going to bank on Naylor returning those steals when it seems so unlikely for him to steal so many bases. Sure, he could do like 15 and that's super helpful, but will he hit 240 again? And will he have 18 homers again? So this is too many questions with the profile. So I'm going to go Freeman, but I'm not really targeting either one.
Completely agree. I'm not targeting either. I think I have a couple shares just because if they fall, I'm like, okay, now I'm interested. Because I know for a fact I got a Naylor share in Barf. He fell like past pick 90. And I'm sitting there just going, yeah, we're gonna play that game right about now.
Yep.
And see where it goes. But the pick 65-ish. Usually even me might think about my first pitcher in this range. So it's tough to be taking a what if on him. So now that we've kind of talked about the main culprits, let's move down a little bit to either the flashy name or there's question marks, like heavy question marks involved. And we'll start with the Sasquatch himself, Vinny Pascantino, ADP 78. Love Vinny P. And he's got a range of 61 to 92 with his picks, which is very interesting. And then you got Tyler Soderstrom, pick 82. So they're four picks apart. But Soderstrom's also a 64 to 94. He gets your first base outfit eligibility. Up and down year for Soderstrom, is still finishing in 276 with 25 bombs. Vinny P hit 264 with 32 and 113 in the RBI department. Where do you go between Soderstrom and Vinny Pascantino?
Yeah, I'm surprised that Soderstrom has this high of an ADP in the OCs, because I don't really view him as someone that would move up that much in the format. So this is kind of surprising to me. I love Soderstrom.
I haven't figured it out all draft season. I'm with you.
It out. Maybe it's the dual eligibility. I don't know. Maybe people want him as an outfielder or something, but I feel like he's more valuable as a first baseman. Last time I mentioned I have Vinny P actually ahead of Naylor, and I have Vinny P, I think, on three teams already. I feel like he's a solid, not going to hurt you average, and he's shown the power that we were hoping for when he was a rookie, or at least, prospect people were very high on Vinny P for his power and all that stuff. So he's kind of showing it now. But with that said, Soderstrom actually had a better barrel rate last year and hard hit, better exit velocity on average. But what keeps me back with Soderstrom is his ground ball rate was almost 49%. His fly ball rate was 31%, whereas Vinny P was more closer to 40 for both of them, which is a much better profile. And then the pulled air for Vinny P is 25%, whereas Soderstrom was less than half. It was 12.1% last year. So I feel like when Soderstrom hits it in the air, he's maximizing his potential, but he's not even pulling it either. And in the park in Sacramento, it kind of can help him out with that. But I just think Vinny P's power profile is a lot better overall. So that's why I've been going after Vinny P a lot more than Soderstrom. I think Soderstrom's capped at like 25 homers, which was what he did last year, whereas Vinny P could do like 30, 35 probably, especially now that Kauffman's fences are in closer. I don't know exactly where they're in closer, but anything like that is going to help Vinny P's power. So I think I'm fine not having the dual eligibility with Soderstrom. I think Vinny P's is a better bet to have a better year.
Yeah, I'm team Vinny P. I was all over Vinny P last year when he was a lot more affordable. I kept saying just play a full season. He's going to be great. He finally played a full season. So still have to do that again, obviously. But I think the skill sets are awesome there. the fences in can't hurt by any means. Soderstrom could still be very good. I can't get a read on his skill set at all. So, like, it was good, but there's a lot of ups and downs. I know his struggles happen when they move him to the outfield. I get all those things, but I still have a lot of question marks there, and it's just one of those guys I'll be okay being wrong on if things take place. All right, the veteran versus the young stud, a guy that we already talked about. We're surprised he didn't fly up the boards as much in these early main events. Let's first go with Wilson Contreras, the 15th first baseman off the board, ADP 166. And then the 16th first baseman off the board, Sal Stewart at 175. So Sal Stewart's going about 9 picks later than the veteran Wilson Contreras. Sal Stewart lit the world on fire in a small sample size. Last year, 5 homers at 255 in 18 games. The quality of contact made people buzz, Ben. Power and speed throughout the minor, like, the profile is very appealing. And then you got Contreras, going to hit you 255 to 265, probably going to get you 20 home. Like, it is the same year in and year out of what Wilson Contreras is going to do. And now he's got an upgraded team in Boston. So where are you at between the boring old and the young up-and-coming stud who kind of sort of had an impact on your finish last year?
Yeah, it's good memory. I did add him. Remember, he hit a homer for me the first week I played him. And then, of course, he sacked because of Brian Hayes, but that's whatever. So I'm surprised at how high Wilson Contreras is going, because I pulled back up the DC comparison to the main event ADP. And in DC's from February 22nd to today, which is the 9th, Wilson Contreras had an ADP in DC's of 187. That's up to 164 in main events. And then per the OCs, it's also in the 160s. So I don't know what happened that is having people move Wilson Contreras up so high. He's not catcher eligible anymore. I know he had like a homer and the other, I remember seeing a home run or something, but that's spring training. It's whatever. I'd much rather take a risk on Sal Stewart than Wilson Contreras, because Wilson always gets hurt. Not that you can really bank on that happening again, but even when he played first last year, he didn't really outperform his catcher stats all that much. So yeah, he had 20 homers. Sure, he had more RBIs and runs, but he's not like an average asset. He won't hurt you, but he's like in the 250, 260 range, which is fine. Stewart, I don't know. His underlying numbers are so good. So I'd rather take a risk at Stewart later than pushing up Wilson Contreras, where I can get first base stats later. Like Sal Stewart could steal double digit bases potentially, whereas Wilson's like at 5 potentially. And yeah, it's just a weird rise in ADP that I don't really understand.
Neither do I. Like, that was one that stood out, the Wilson Contreras bump, as you mentioned. And I'm like, he's boring. Maybe that's a 15 team thing. Sure. Like, I got shares of him. I'm not saying I have been clear, but usually he falls where I take,
it's like 200 Contreras. Though he's boring at 200, not boring at 160.
Exactly. Agreed. Full agree on that. That's what I'm saying. When I've had him, I didn't overpay for him.
Yeah. I know you weren't taking him there.
Yeah. But like Sal Stewart, I love, but like I look at these ADPs and I'm thinking, Sal Stewart never seems to last that long in the drafts I'm in. So again, to what we talked about earlier, surprised he's not a higher riser in these formats as well. So yeah, it's Sal Stewart rather easy for me, especially in a 12. Like, take the upside play at this point in time and see where it goes. But if you're in a 15, I guess the boring is beautiful approach. But yeah, I'll take Sal Stewart pretty easily on this one. All right, two powerhouses with a lot of potential batting average woes. Got Spencer Torkelson, 18th first baseman off the board at 183. The 20th first baseman is Christian Walker at 208. So I told you we'd have a gap pretty soon, the 25-pick gap. Try not to make that influence. Let's talk profiles on this one if we can. But obviously the 25 picks probably has a massive impact on where you're going to pick between the two. But you got Torkelson, 31 homers after a down 2024. So he's got 31 homers in two of the last four seasons. Hit 240 last year, actually the best of his short major league career. And then we had Christian Walker, struggled last year, but at the end still had 27 homers, 88 RBIs. The 238 is not ideal. Where are you at on Spencer Torkelson versus Christian Walker? Yes, 25 picks apart, but I guess skill sets as a whole.
So I think I actually have, you know, I definitely have Walker. I took him in my DC auction. I don't have Torkelson yet, but the ADP would make me go with Walker, to your point.
Yep.
But when I have them in my rankings, I actually have them back to back overall, 170 range, which where it is doesn't matter. But they're essentially the same profile, Torkelson and Walker, except for in my mind, I prefer Torkelson in a vacuum because he's potentially improving, whereas Walker's, if anything, he's declining. So they've had the same skills last year, arguably, but I'd rather take the younger player who may not have hit his upside yet versus Walker. But like I said, at the ADP, though, it's not that big of a difference. I would just wait to take Walker. The only thing that's really worse in Walker's favor on the underlying stats is the walk rate was worse. The contact rate was worse. The pulled air was a lot worse too, but the XBA was actually higher for Walker. The barrel rates were almost in line. Walker had a better hard hit. Their X slugs are pretty close. Torkelson chases less. He's more flyball heavy than Walker, so that would hurt his batting average more probably than Walker. The K's aren't that far apart, but yeah, at those prices, give me Walker, but overall I prefer Torkelson.
Yeah, I think I'm obviously priced. I'll take Walker 100% of the time. I don't know. I still like Walker a lot. I get it was down. I get he's getting older. Struggles have been real. Torque's volatility seems so large to me, but maybe the ceiling. Like, I don't know if the ceiling's better. We've seen 31 homers twice. Like, does he have the 40 home run ceiling? Maybe. Like, the ballpark doesn't help him. I know a lot of people like Torque, so I know I'm not. You're not alone on this one. By any means, maybe I'm alone going the other way, but I'm going to take Christian Walker. That's just, that's one of my dudes. I do like him a lot. We'll see where that goes. This one sounds like it's going to be easy after what you said earlier in the show. And it'd be easy. It's easy for me as well, but I brought it up more so because they're getting drafted next to each other. And that's Jake Berger, the 21st first baseman off the board, ADP 239. Kyle Manzardo, the 22nd first baseman off the board at 249. So they're 10 picks apart. 21st, 22nd first baseman off the board. Manzardo started playing every day at 27 homers, 234 average, almost a Christian Walker type deal. Berger was hurt a ton, 16 homers in 103 games at 236. But a Berger with 140 plus games, we know what we get. It's a big if, though. Where are you at on Jake Berger versus Kyle Manzardo?
Give me all the Bergers.
Yeah.
Which I know is what you agree with. What you're going to go with, too. Yeah. With so Berger, I forget what we were talking about earlier, but Berger had a huge ADP drop, which there was good reasons for it, but he also, it's because he was hurt. So I'd rather take the dip on someone who had a bad year because they were hurt more so than anything else. Berger's never really hurt your average when he plays. His XBA was 246, which is 20 points higher than Manzardo's last year, despite having worse contact rate, but Berger hits the ball harder than Manzardo. Also, Manzardo's probably going to platoon. Whether it's probably not going to be Rhys Hoskins, but the Guardians bench is all right, is basically all righties and a switch hitter. And Manzardo last year, haven't mentioned it yet on today's show, but I always do the percent of plate appearances versus righties as a metric for if they did arguably platoon last year, as in 80s the threshold, and Manzardo was at 82% versus righties. So he, in all intents and purposes, he was a platoon hitter last year, and it seems like he's going to stay that way as well. So at this exact same point in the draft, this give me Berger's going to play all the time. Also, Manzardo scored fewer than 50 runs last year, I think, which is kind of wild. So he's basically just like a homer and RBI asset, whereas Berger can help you better in runs and average. So, and I think, and the power isn't really that different between the two. Arguably, Berger's better. So it's not, this one isn't really close for me either.
Yeah, it wasn't close for me. I just like to bring some of these up when they actually are getting drafted by each other. It's like, huh. What am I missing? Because obviously a lot of people are drafting. So let's get the opinions out there. It's very surprising to me. And I know I'm biased, but to hear someone like yourself that actually looks at numbers, not just, you know, I see a big guy that mashes. That it has a great name because Bubba's Burgers goes a long way around these parts. Yeah, it's great to see. All right, the last one I got for you. This one, I don't know. It sounds like you're not really interested in either one, at least in a 12, but maybe in a 15. So we'll see. Andrew Vaughn. Having a really good spring versus Miguel Vargas. Andrew Vaughn is the 23rd first baseman off the board, ADP of 274. Vargas is the 26th off the board, so they're a little gap, but ADP is 283, so they're about 9 picks apart on draft day. Vargas, obviously first base, third base. We saw 16 homers, 234, 6 steals in 138 games. Andrew Vaughn had his coming out party with Milwaukee. Final stat line was 14 homers, 254, but monster go for him. And in previous seasons, we saw about 20 home run seasons from Andrew Vaughn. So where are you at on these two?
I lean Vaughn, despite all the trashing I gave him earlier. It wasn't that bad, but I definitely downplayed Vaughn. Really, it comes down to Vaughn's power numbers versus Vargas's. Maybe in a DC, I would have preferred Vargas. It seems like the playing time is more secure for him. I gave my reasons for how Vaughn kind of was a short side platoon at times late last year after being on fire. But where it's Fab season now, I think Vaughn has higher upside based on his EV last year, his barrel rate, his hard hit. Even his xBA was 36 points higher than Vargas's, which is a lot. So for me, I'd still take Vaughn. They're going to hit kind of the same spot in their team's lineup, so that's not going to be a factor in swaying me one way or the other. But I wouldn't be upset if I ended up getting shut out on first base up until this point. I would just, like, next pick, take another first baseman right away. Maybe if Vaughn's there, I take Vargas right away and then get both of them, and I'll put Vargas as my CI just to hopefully hit on one of the two of them. But, I hope to have a first baseman by this point for sure.
Yeah, these are definitely CI spots if these are your starting first basemen. Not saying something went wrong, but something probably went wrong on the draft. You played chicken with way too many spots at that point and lost. I love Miguel Vargas. I think there is more upside there. He's super young. I like Andrew Vaughn a lot. I'm just curious, does he get to still play every day? Because towards the end of the season, they didn't play him all the time versus righties. That'd be my only concern with Andrew Vaughn. If I knew Andrew Vaughn's playing like 145-plus games, it's probably Andrew Vaughn in this scenario for me. Where Vargas, I think, is going to play unless he gets hurt. Like, I don't see there's a difference there. So I'll take Vargas over the two, but I do like Vaughn a lot. Both of these strictly corner infield options, folks. Do not wait that long. All right, Ben, any final late targets for you at the first base position? Like, I'm always a Josh Bell. I have a lot of Josh Bell in 15s as reserves. What kind of guys are you looking at down here? Because there actually are decent guys if you're in a depth position, I guess.
Yeah, I guess if I was in DC brain, there'd be more guys I'd want to name. I guess Rhys Hoskins is interesting now that he's probably going to play full-time for the Guardians.
Yep.
I don't think he had awful – let me pull up his stats. I don't think he was that terrible last year.
I just heard a lot.
So his average will hurt you, Hoskins. Mm-hmm. But he had a 10% barrel rate, 10.3. His hard hit was 46.4%. Pulled air, I almost can't read it, it's so dark green. It was 34.5%, so he's just swinging for the fences every time, it seems like.
Yep.
If you need a power flyer, I'd go with Rhys Hoskins. And I have him kind of ranked a little bit after Vargas and Vaughn, so he's like the fallback of those guys. And we mentioned O'Hearn. I guess O'Hearn will make your projections look okay, but I just don't think there's an upside really with him.
Yeah, Ryan feels the same way. He ridiculed me when I took him. In a 15 late. Yes, I got the Ryan Rath on that one.
Yeah, well, actually, a very good player took him in one of the main events. So that kind of stood out to me. But yeah, I'd rather chase a little more upside than O'Hearn. And I don't want Arias. I don't want Shanwell, Horowitz. Those guys are more like DC plays. So yeah, it really falls off quickly when it comes to Fab options.
Yeah, it's pretty much like Bell, like Hoskins, I don't mind. Like, if you really want to get weird and pray Kobe Mayo does something, but that's a big
Edward prayer. Julian, because he plays in cores and he has first and second.
Maybe, yeah. Like, it's just, those are big, yeah, last pick type stuff. But otherwise, it's really rough as well. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see where that one goes. But any final thoughts, Ben, before we wrap this one up? First base is in the books. It's a weird position is the best way I can put it.
Yeah, and I like how we did the late picks, because I remembered back to my DCs where after Josh Bell, it was bad. So definitely make sure you get even your backup. I feel like you do want it earlier. Like, you don't want to waste too much too. I have a pick on a backup first baseman, but just know I'd probably rather have my CI be a first baseman than a third baseman, maybe, because I feel like there's probably better third base options that could go on the bench than first base.
Full agree on that one. All right, we will wrap it up there. Again, thanks everybody for joining us in the chat today. Hope you guys enjoyed this show. Little main event ADP talk, little first base preview. We'll be back later this week with more action coming your way. But for now, follow Ben on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. He'll be drafting in New Jersey this weekend, right next to the mouth himself, which will be quite the experience for Ben. I can only imagine having to focus on his projection and numbers and this guy next to him. It'll be great. You can follow me on Twitter at BDentric. Until next time, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 840. Catch you all later.